A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's got a whole thing about multimodal transport integration this week. He's looking at what it actually means for different systems. Air, rail, light rail, underground, to interoperate in a well-planned network. He wants to know why air transport belongs in that definition, how seamless integration works between airports and domestic rail backbones and municipal systems, what makes these systems easy for tourists, and what common pitfalls plague the less well-executed integrations. There's a lot to unpack here.
And it's the right moment for it. Cities are under real pressure to expand public transport. Car dependency is breaking down as a scalable model, and the question isn't whether to build more infrastructure, it's whether what gets built actually connects to everything else. The airports are where this gets especially interesting, because they're the entry point for millions of people who then need to keep moving.
So today we're looking at the anatomy of multimodal integration, where it sings and where it falls apart.
Let's define what we're talking about first. Interoperability in public transport isn't just physical connections. Same platform, same building. That's the part everyone sees. The real definition includes coordinated schedules, unified ticketing, consistent wayfinding, and fare structures that work across modes without the passenger having to think about it.
Four layers, then. Physical, temporal, financial, and informational.
And if any one of those layers is missing, the whole thing feels broken, even if the train station is literally inside the airport. You can walk 30 seconds from baggage claim to a platform, and still have a terrible experience if the train doesn't run when your flight lands, or you need a different ticket you can't buy at the machine you just used.
Which is why including air transport in this conversation matters. A flight is one leg of a journey. Nobody lands at an airport and ceases to need transport. The airport is a node in a mobility network, not the end of one network and the start of another.
Schiphol is the canonical example here. The railway station is directly beneath the terminal, not adjacent, not a shuttle bus away, beneath it. You come down the escalator from arrivals and you're standing in a station that serves intercity trains to Amsterdam Centraal, Rotterdam, The Hague, plus international services. Thalys to Paris and Brussels, Eurostar to London. It's not a spur line that connects to a bigger station somewhere else. It's the station.
And the trains don't just run on a fixed interval. They're coordinated with flight arrival banks.
Right. That's the scheduling layer doing real work. If you have a station under the airport, but the trains run every 40 minutes on a clock that ignores when flights actually land, you've built the physical connection and stopped. Schiphol timed the service to the demand pulses created by the flight schedule. That's the difference between a train station at an airport and an integrated system.
So let's start with the gold standards, the systems that get this right.
Schiphol is one, Frankfurt is another, and Frankfurt takes it a step further. The long-distance station, the Fernbahnhof, opened in 1999, and it's connected directly to the ICE high-speed network. You can step off a plane from Singapore, walk through the terminal, and board a train to Munich or Cologne or Basel without leaving the airport complex. The station handles both regional and long-distance services, and there's a dedicated terminal for Lufthansa Express Rail where you check in for your train the same way you'd check in for a connecting flight.
Wait, check in for a train?
With baggage transfer. You hand over your luggage at the air rail desk, and it's tagged through to your final destination. You don't see it again until you arrive. And here's the part that makes this integrated. A single booking covers both the flight and the train leg. You buy a journey to Nuremberg, not a flight to Frankfurt, plus a train ticket. Lufthansa treats the ICE as a flight segment with a flight number. LH3000-something operates on rails.
That's the fare integration layer doing something unusual. Collapsing the distinction between modes entirely. The passenger doesn't need to know they're on a train versus a plane for the purposes of booking or payment.
And it changes how you think about the network. Frankfurt stops being a destination and becomes a junction. You route through it the way you'd route through a major rail interchange. The airport is infrastructure for the whole country, not just for people flying into Frankfurt.
Transport for London does something similar, but at the municipal scale. The Oyster car launched in 2003 as a unified ticketing platform across the Tube, buses, the DLR, London Overground, and eventually some national rail services. One card, every mode. And then in 2014 they extended contactless payment. You just tap your bank card or phone, same as Oyster, no separate card needed.
The mechanism that makes it work is fare capping. You tap in and out all day across however many modes you use, and the system calculates the cheapest possible fare at the end of the day. You never pay more than the equivalent day pass, even if you took 6 different journeys on 3 different modes. That removes the cognitive load of figuring out whether a day pass is worth it or whether you should pay per trip. The system does the optimization for you.
Which is a form of respect for the passenger. You're not expected to understand the fare zones or the peak versus off-peak pricing structure. The computer figures it out and charges you the minimum.
And that's what ties all 3 of these examples together, Schiphol, Frankfurt, TfL. They treat the journey as a single product. The passenger buys a journey, not a collection of disconnected legs. The system absorbs the complexity, so the passenger doesn't have to.
The technical enablers break down into those 4 categories you mentioned. Physical infrastructure, direct connections, moving walkways, platform-level transfers that don't require going outside or through additional security. Scheduling coordination timetables, aligned with arrival and departure banks, so the connection window is tight but reliable. Fare integration. Single ticket or payment method, covering all legs with automatic best fare calculation. And information integration, real-time displays that show the next train alongside the next gate, often on the same screen.
The information layer is the one people underestimate. At Schiphol, the departure boards in the terminal show train times. At Frankfurt, the rail station displays show flight information. It's bidirectional. The systems talk to each other, and the passenger sees a unified view of their journey rather than 2 separate information environments that they have to mentally stitch together.
And when it works, it's almost invisible. You don't notice it because nothing went wrong. You walked from the gate to the platform, your ticket worked, the train came when you expected it, and you arrived at your destination. The infrastructure disappears.
That's the goal. Invisibility of the infrastructure. The best system is the one the passenger forgets exists.
Those are the success stories. But for every Schiphol, there's a system that gets it spectacularly wrong.
And the failure modes map directly onto those 4 layers. Physical integration without the other 3 is the most common one. You build a beautiful station at the airport, cut the ribbon, take the photos, and then the trains run on a schedule that has nothing to do with flight arrivals. The last bus departs 2 minutes before the flight lands, and the next one is in an hour. The infrastructure is there, but the scheduling layer was never built.
That's the thing about physical integration. It photographs well. Politicians love a new station. Nobody takes a photo of a timetable.
Fare fragmentation is the second big one. Each mode requires a separate ticket, a different payment system, or a different app. You land at an airport, you need 1 ticket for the airport shuttle, another for the regional rail, and a third for the city metro. 3 machines, 3 payment flows, 3 receipts. Tourists end up queuing at multiple machines or overpaying for a day pass that doesn't actually cover all the modes they need.
LAX is the classic example here. The flyaway bus connects to Union Station, but it requires a separate ticket, not integrated with regional rail fares. A passenger arriving at LAX can't buy a single ticket covering the bus to Union Station and then a Metrolink train to their final destination. 2 separate tickets from 2 different agencies. The physical connection exists, but the fare layer is completely absent.
And that's Los Angeles, a major global city, one of the busiest airports in the world. If they can't solve this, imagine what it looks like in smaller cities with fewer resources.
The third failure pattern is information silos. The airport arrivals board shows flight times, but nothing about onward train or bus departures. The train station displays show only rail times, not bus connections. The passenger is left to figure out the transfer themselves, switching between different apps or websites, each with its own interface and its own definition of what on time means.
and the information that does exist often isn't in the languages the passenger needs. A tourist arriving in a country where they don't speak the language is already disoriented. If the signage assumes local knowledge, if it uses abbreviations or route names that only make sense to residents, you've added friction at exactly the point where the passenger is most vulnerable to confusion.
Which brings us to what well-planned systems do well for tourists, specifically.
Clear wayfinding is the foundation. Consistent signage across modes, usually in multiple languages. The same icon means the same thing, whether you're in the airport, the train station, or the metro. Colors are consistent. Directions are unambiguous. You don't need to relearn the visual language every time you switch modes.
The tube map is the global design standard here. It's simplified, color-coded, mode-agnostic, and it deliberately omits geographic accuracy to emphasize connectivity. The distance between stations on the map has nothing to do with the actual distance. It's about making the network legible. A tourist can look at it and understand how to get from Heathrow to King's Cross in about 10 seconds.
Harry Beck designed that in 1931, and the fundamental insight hasn't changed. The map is a diagram of relationships, not a geographic representation. It tells you what connects to what, in what order, and where to change. Everything else is noise.
Single payment method is the second thing. Tourists don't want to understand local fare zones. They don't know what Zone 3 means, or whether their hotel is in it. Contactless payment solves this. Tap the same card or phone you use at home, and the system figures out the rest. TFL's contactless system works with any bank card from anywhere in the world. No Oyster card required. No app to download. No local currency needed.
Real-time information in English and the local language is the third piece. Delay announcements, platform changes, service disruptions. All of it needs to be accessible to someone who doesn't speak the local language. And it needs to be consistent across modes. If the train is delayed and you'll miss your bus connection, the system should tell you that and suggest an alternative.
Staff assistance at transfer points is the fourth. Even with perfect signage and real-time information, some passengers will need help. Having staff at the key transfer points, airport to rail, rail to metro, who can answer questions in multiple languages, makes the difference between a stressful experience and a smooth one.
The fourth failure pattern is what I'd call last-mile neglect. The airport to city connection is excellent fast train, frequent service, clear signage. But the connection from the city station to the hotel or conference center is poor. No direct bus, long walking distance with luggage, or the only option is an expensive taxi. You've built a world-class airport rail link and then abandoned the passenger at the other end.
Which undermines the entire chain. The journey isn't airport to central station. The journey is airport to hotel. If the last kilometer falls apart, the first 500 kilometers of excellent integration don't matter.
There's a subtler failure pattern too. What I think of as seamless in name only. The physical connection is there, the marketing says integrated, but the experience tells a different story. You walk from the gate to the station, but the signage disappears halfway. Or the ticket machine at the station doesn't accept the payment method you used at the airport. Or the train platform isn't accessible with luggage carts. The pieces are adjacent, but they don't actually work together.
The seams are still visible. You feel every transition.
Right. And that's the test. A truly integrated system makes the transitions invisible. You shouldn't feel yourself switching from air to rail to metro. You should feel like you're on a single journey that happens to use different vehicles.
So, if you're a city planner looking at this, the checklist is physical co-location, coordinated schedules, unified fares, shared information systems, and consistent wayfinding. Miss any one of those, and you've built a connection, but not an integration.
And the thing is, the technology to do all of this exists. Contactless payment is widespread. Real-time data APIs are standard. Schedule coordination is a software problem. None of this requires inventing anything new. It requires the institutional will to make different agencies and different modes cooperate, which is a political problem, not a technical one.
Different agencies with different budgets, different priorities, and different bosses. The train operator does a report to the airport authority. The metro system is run by the city. The regional rail by the province or the state. Getting them to coordinate schedules and share fare revenue is a negotiation, not an engineering project.
Frankfurt solved this by having Lufthansa drive it. The airline wanted to sell journeys beyond the airport, so they pushed for the integration. They had the commercial incentive to make it work, and they had enough leverage to get the rail operator to the table. Without a champion like that, these projects tend to stall in committee.
Speaking of getting it wrong and right, I think someone in this room has a story about the early days at Frankfurt.
First week, the Lufthansa Express Rail check-in opened. About half the bags ended up in Cologne. The other half went to the lost luggage office. This was 1999. The Fern Bahnhof had just opened, and I was working baggage logistics, moving misdirected bags between the air rail desk and the train platforms by hand. I had a cart and a clipboard and a list of about 40 bags a day that had gone somewhere they weren't supposed to.
The physical connection was there, but the data layer wasn't.
The baggage handling software didn't talk to the railway system. Two different databases, two different tracking numbers, no API between them. A bag check through to Nuremberg would get tagged with the airline code, but the railway had its own internal tracking that didn't recognize it. So the bag would arrive at the platform, someone would scan it, and the system would just shrug. Unknown item. Send it to lost luggage.
They built the perfect station and forgot the data layer.
It took about 18 months to fix. They had to build a translation layer between the two systems, basically a mapping table that converted airline baggage IDs to railway tracking numbers. Once that was in place, the misdirect rate dropped to almost nothing. But for that first year and a half, I had a very secure job.
That's the operational reality behind what looks like seamless integration from the outside. The passenger sees a smooth transfer. Behind the scenes, someone had to figure out that two inventory systems with completely different architectures needed to recognize each other's labels.
The thing that struck me then, and it's still true now, is that the physical stuff is the easy part. Concrete and steel, you pour it and it stays there. The hard part is the invisible plumbing. The databases, the APIs, the handshake between systems that were never designed to meet. Frankfurt got the station right on day one. It took them a year and a half to get the data right, and until the data was right, the station might as well not have been there for anyone checking baggage.
Which is a pretty good metaphor for integration generally. The visible infrastructure gets all the attention, but the invisible layer is where it actually works or doesn't.
I counted bags for 18 months. I can tell you exactly how many went missing the week of the opening. 212. Most of them ended up in Cologne because the default routing for unrecognized items on the rail side was to send them to the central sorting facility, which happened to be in Cologne. So, for a while, if you flew into Frankfurt and checked your bag through to Stuttgart, there was a decent chance it was sitting in a warehouse in Cologne with a confused railway employee staring at it.
That's the thing. The failure wasn't random. It was systematic. The default behavior of the system, in the absence of integration, produced a specific, predictable failure. Bags went to Cologne because that's where the railway's sorting logic sent anything it didn't recognize.
After about 6 months, the railway put a dedicated person at the Frankfurt station whose entire job was to intercept Cologne-bound bags before they left the platform. She had a list of known airline baggage ID prefixes, and she'd physically pull anything that matched. Low-tech solution to a high-tech problem.
A human API.
That's exactly what she was. She retired about 2 years after they fixed the software. I think about her sometimes. She was the integration layer.
The lesson from Frankfurt is that integration is as much about data as it's about concrete and steel, which leaves us with a question. As more cities build new transport infrastructure, and they will because car dependency is hitting its limits, are they going to learn from the successes or repeat the failures?
The answer probably depends on whether they treat integration as a data problem first and a construction problem second. It's easier to get funding for a new station than for a middleware layer that makes two existing systems talk to each other. The station has a ribbon cutting. The API doesn't.
The next frontier is exactly that. Not just physical or fair integration, but data integration. Real-time APIs that let a passenger's phone plan the entire journey across modes, with live updates and automatic rebooking when a flight is delayed. Helsinki's WIM app is an early example. It bundles public transport, taxis, and bike share into a single subscription. You buy mobility as a service, not individual tickets.
That's the logical endpoint of what we've been describing. The passenger doesn't think about modes at all. They say where they want to go, and the system assembles the journey from whatever combination of air, rail, bus, metro, bike share, and taxi makes sense. The integration is total, and the infrastructure is invisible.
A well-planned system makes the passenger forget they're transferring at all. That's the goal. Invisibility of the infrastructure.
This has been My Weird Prompts, with production by Hilbert Flumingtop, who, it turns out, was once the human API between Lufthansa and Deutsche Bahn.
We'll be back soon. If you've got a story about a transit integration that worked beautifully or failed spectacularly, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
See you tomorrow.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.